Market moving insight and analysis. Join Jim Cramer, David Faber, and me, Carl Quintanilla, on the opening bell hour of CNBC Squawk on the Street. Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber, live at Post 9 of the New York Stock Exchange. Futures a bit soft on this last day of January after that big Friday rally. Best day for the S&P in a year and a half. It'll be another busy week. More than 100 S&P earnings, some big FANG names, and Jobs Friday. Our roadmap begins with a dismal month for stocks coming to a close. More red expected at the open.
Plus, Spotify moves to address COVID misinformation. Will it be enough to contain a growing list of musicians who are asking for their music to be removed from the platform? And I'll have a lot more on that very large LBO this morning. Elliott and Invista's purchase of software company Citrix. As I said, one of the biggest tech buyouts we've seen in quite some time, and some complexity to it as well.
Meanwhile, guys, 105-point gain on the S&P Friday, Jim. Just really quick, what was that about?
Well, I think that one of the things that might be happening is that in the great bear markets that I've studied, there tend to be people who make money all week, but they are short sellers. And they want to cover their shorts just in case something good happens over the weekend. It's the exact opposite mindset. So I think that that had a lot to do with it. I also think that people, David, you know, Apple is such a powerful part of people's equation.
Yes.
So people start saying, well, you want to wait a second. Let's reopen some of the books. Let's go over and see whether things are as bad as we thought. So it brought up, the semis came back. They had been a terrible, terrible group. And you could see, like, midday, we've got this thing happened with ServiceNow. Now, we had Bill McDermott on. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning of higher, multiple, profitable companies starting to gain. And, of course, oil's been consistent. But ServiceNow Atlassian was very good, and that was a stock that was only up like 4 and then suddenly kept going. So a lot of the shorted names. And then let's not forget, even Kathy Wood, there's a lot of talk this morning about Kathy Wood. We had that fellow who developed
They had Tuttle on Squawk Box. Right. Yep. They got him.
And what I was saying,
that was hard.
I was kind of making a joke about it, saying that even I could never be so cruel as to come up with a fund that's anti-someone. But that's what the person did. It's interesting, too. He called her Kathy Woods.
Yes, I noticed that. They were incorrect in how they
It was like the guy at the end of the Apple call. He said, listen, I've got the iWatch. No, not the iWatch. She said, I feel like I have a halo behind me, like a shell. Oh, thank you for getting rid of that shell ad.
Oh, yeah, well, you do.
ARK did buy some Hood on Friday, 2.4 million shares, unloaded some Spotify. But to your point about revisiting some of the books, upgrades today for Tesla,
yes,
for Netflix, Spotify.
Right. I mean, you know, one of the things that's so difficult for the retail investors, they all have to cut the price targets. So I'm used to when a price target is cut, Carl, for the stock to go down. But every, you know, like ServiceNow, if you're using a $700 price target, you want to raise your rating or boost ServiceNow. At the same time, you got to cut the price target. And these stocks have come down to the point where it's like, listen, I'm raising my rating X, but I'm cutting my price target 150. It's just not, it's hard for retail people to understand if there really is enthusiasm. Meantime, there were some bad earnings at the end of last week that we really didn't spend that much time on. I happen to like Caterpillar very much. But when you listen to that call, the expenses, the margins, terrible. I mean, and they did good. They had great orders, but it was terrible. VF Corp.
Yeah.
Rather terrible. Vans, big slowdown in China. And then the one that we didn't talk about at all, 3M, this combat arms litigation. And how at one point in Steve Tusa's note, he says it could be an unfathomable risk to 3M.
I feel like people were saying that about Talc. Fast with the water. Talc. Well, not talc with 3M.
Fast, yeah, right. Yeah. And
that's, you know, these companies have a litigation strategy that seems to manage and contain these risks for long periods of time.
But I thought what was interesting was there was an article in the New York Times that was very negative, January 28th, about the combat arms. This is just for hearing. But what happens is, first you get the negative, and then you can put the negative into context. And so 3M says, listen, we're fighting vigorously, and go read our filings. So then I said, shoot, you know, then you suddenly discover wow, this is a little worse than I thought. This is what happened with talc. And then it settles in and you realize it was a mistake to sell 3M off of it. But while you're reading it, while you're reading Steve Tusa's piece, the great J.P. Morgan analyst, you know, he at one point he just says, look, I'm going to use a figure, and I really regret it, but $1 trillion. Right. Now, that's just, to me, ludicrous. But, you know, then I start thinking about asbestos.
But to your point about, Caterpillar, today it's Otis, guides below.
I know, that was an unusual, and there it is again. What is it? It's China slowing. I don't know if you guys caught Eunice Yu's incredible piece this morning, but it just seems like everyone in China's on a line for testing. The productivity in China has to be just terrible.
We've talked about this for a number of weeks now, and it has continued to be a key question as to how much the economy is slowing as a result of their zero COVID policy, which continues, unlike virtually every other nation world.
Otis was all China. The weakness was all China.
Right. Well, what about the property sector there? I mean, they continue to say that it wasn't going to impact them, but it does. I mean, it's hard to imagine it's not.
Well, the state-owned enterprises are still building. There are 10,000, I think Trudy Marks will tell you, there's 10,000 different developers over there, and all we do is we hear about the worst ones. But at the same time, there's no doubt about it. China is a different animal than it was 6 months ago. And a lot, we don't know how much of it is trying to have pollution-free, how much is actually a change in pollution, and how much of it is a level of control of COVID that just seems a zero COVID policy without the right vaccines.
Well, you know, the New York Times over the weekend had a story about the level of control that is being allowed over the population as a result as well of the COVID protocols. Because it's all mobile, of course, in China, as so many things are.
Right.
And you have to basically every day queue in your health code and get your approval to enter anything or do anything.
Right.
And it does give them yet another element of control, which may be something that the regime is happy about.
Well, mentioned that Eunice talked about going to the drugstore, and if you bought cough medicine, the government knows it. Now, it's quite obvious to me that there's any number of things that the government knows. But what shocked me was, if you're going to have lines ever, I mean, China is a great engine of the world, and China's not right now. It's just it's a downshifting engine. And the Otis quarter was, you know, there it was. The first time that Otis did not, they have good service revenue. First time that they were forecasting a slowing in China. And we're just not used to seeing China hitting the numbers.
IMF cut their China numbers last week.
Yes.
Today, Goldman cuts our GDP numbers, sees Q1 at 0.5. This fiscal cliff with the expanded child tax credit expiration is going to hurt. They think disposable income, Jim, is going to go back to below pre-pandemic trend?
Well, this is what I've been worried about. The critics of Jay Powell, I put up something positive this weekend with Powell. Like, there's just so many things that are not, that could lead to slower growth. At the same time, we can't get bacon. There's things that are slower growth. At the same time, you can't get that desk. So it's at what point, if you look at the semiconductors, they are trading as if that whole problem is over. That there's going to be an inventory glut in 6 months. Those stocks tend to look out 6 months. If you look at the collapse of AMD and then the collapse of NVIDIA.
Is that what you're ready to call them? Collapses, AMD and NVIDIA?
Well, AMD was at 170. Went to
all right, but we can take a look. I can go back to any other time period, even a year, and I'm not sure I'd call it a collapse.
Well, no, but 170 to, what do you want? What do you want to call 170 to 110? Is that
It's a downshift.
It's a
downshift. Or as a hedge fund guy would say, it's a drawdown. Yeah. Whatever the heck that means.
So, all right, so what you're saying is basically,
Lisa Su is like, your average, we've had a drawdown.
I just think that
there's nothing we could do about it.
Okay, how about this? The stocks are forecasting that that there will no longer be a constraint. And if that's the case,
you just don't think it's a function of lower multiples as a result of the current environment, because obviously, as we know, investors are not willing to award the same multiples any longer than they were 2 months ago.
Well, I think that the multiples were deserving, but I also think that when you read about double ordering and you read about what could happen, and you realize that the real problem is the, you know, these 10 million, the larger form factor versus smaller, the stocks are signaling that Teradyne and Lam Research, which had big quarters, are really
one-offs.
Excuse me?
Not one-offs.
Are not one-offs. Yeah. Not one-offs. Those were devastating.
Well, I remember, I think what the firm was, but it was a Micron report late last year said winter's coming.
Right.
And that was it was going to be returned to classic cyclical times.
And they had a two-quarter inventory correction, but in the interim, you lost a tremendous amount of money. But David, all I'm saying is that I'm creating a view which just says that these people who say 50 basis points or six hikes or whatever are presuming that nothing could really go right, mm-hmm. that there won't be a slowing. And I wonder whether that isn't that Jay Powell doesn't put out these numbers because I think he wants to see. And so then they claim the wait and see, that's how he got behind the curve. But what happens if everybody in this country has the experience of New York and COVID blows through and we don't have quarantines anymore and people return to work? Do you think supply chain is going to be
as bad as
now?
First of all, I think a lot of the country has been at work. And even if it does blow through, it's not going to do what we do here. We know that. There are different responses in regions in this country to Omicron anyway.
But do you think if every single company, I mean, one of the things that was good.
So we've.
By the way, semiconductor problems, no, on Otis, and supply chain problems, no.
But your point's an interesting one, Jim, which is what about return to office? We haven't talked about it in a long time.
Okay.
It now, given at least in this area where you're back to baseline again, or close to it, thankfully, in terms of new cases and positivity. When are people coming back to the office?
Well, I think
walk around downtown. We don't talk about it enough. The Financial District or Midtown, which had really recovered a great deal. Let's call it November, December.
Right.
Things have been crushed as a result.
That's
of
what
this.
I was saying to
small
to,
businesses.
To Becky and Andrew, which is that labor has gotten
even though this was a mile, you know, you can
here,
argue about whether we need to take the same restrictions. It's very depressing.
Wall City, I think, returns
seventh,
a week from today.
The 7th.
Yeah.
Feb 7th, they return at least a few days a week
at
Citi, which is obviously not far from
right.
here.
Right. You sound depressed.
I don't know. You know, it's funny. We talked so often about it a while ago, but I think we've missed the economic dislocation that's taken place, at least among small businesses, as
You're
a result
talking
of
about economic scarring.
Correct.
Right, yeah.
And I'm talking more locally, so, you know, a lot of our viewers may not care because they're living in Florida.
Look, I think that there's a change in New York, a change in that. How come? Do you think that we can get help at our restaurants because suddenly they're meccas? No, it's because the other places went under and we were better capitalized.
Right. We're going to learn a lot more about labor supply on Friday. We get that jobs number consensus right around 178. Of course, the prior was 199, that big disappointment. Take a look at futures here. Very busy week. It's not just earnings. We're going to have BOE, ECB, some PMIs, and a lot more. Futures here mix as the NASDAQ tries to hold on to Friday's momentum. Don't go away. Spotify, responding to the controversy surrounding its podcast hosted by Joe Rogan, stream service publishing some platform rules, saying it will add a content advisory directing listeners to its COVID-19 information hub. As you know by now, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell pulled their music from Spotify, accusing Rogan of spreading misinformation. And now in this Instagram post, Rogan apologized and promised to balance things out, Jim. Says he's going to try to do better by having a wider variety of opinions.
Right. I thought that was good. I think that people are getting concerned about what was the real policy that they had, because I think that he was one of the primary people who made it so this country didn't get as vaccinated as another 29 countries that are not as well off as we are.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, today I got upgrades over at Citi, and their general argument with Spotify and Netflix is that the economics of the business, the shares are not reflecting better economics, maybe not sub numbers in absolute terms, but better pricing, better margins down the road.
Well, I mean, I think that look, this is the era of podcasting. We all know people who just they used to read, now they podcast.
But it used to be called radio, but yeah, now it's long form radio. It's nice. Listen, it's good. Yeah.
Look, I think Spotify is a great company, and I do think that they're doing better than
we can remember when they made the push into podcasting. Daniel Ek joined us, I think, here a few years back when they made their decision, and they've obviously allocated a good amount of capital towards it.
And they were laughed at initially when they did it, or people felt that they were not going down the right path, or that their business was running out.
Yeah. Well, they may not have anticipated that it would bring them into public view in this way. But it doesn't seem to be having an impact.
Do you remember Monsanto?
The stock has been suffering along with many others. But as you see, it's going to respond possibly
to that. Remember the problems that Monsanto had? You know, the chemical problems that lowered the valuation.
Yes.
Did you ever listen to Monsanto by Neil Young? He could be a visionary.
No, I didn't, actually.
Neil Young's very smart.
It's unclear how many other artists are going to join him at this point, whether or not this has been enough to stem the comments from the potential tide of other artists.
But I think the issue was, I didn't know it was semantics. Like, you're not allowed to say it'll kill you. But anything else is fine. No, that shouldn't be the debate. I mean, geez, if that's the debate, well, you know, you'd rather say, okay, listen, I'd rather get sick than vaccinate. That's what that leads to that.
Right. But then it gets to the larger question of misinformation on these large platforms and what responsibility the platform owner has to policing it.
Well, do you think Mark Zuckerberg?
And that gets you to...
Do you think Zuckerberg just says, you know what, I'm going surfing because we got another guy on the hot seat, Rogan.
Yeah, I think
right?
He does.
Well, we're going to hear more from them this week.
Someone said they had a good, going to have a good quarter. A
couple stories on the wire about how we're going to learn a lot more about their metaverse strategy.
Well, there are a lot of companies that have metaverse strategies that we're just now beginning to realize could have, you know, for instance, Coors has got a metaverse strategy.
Coors?
Yeah, Coors,
the beer company.
Yeah, they're going to have a metaverse strategy.
What are they going to do in the metaverse, Jim?
Oh, it's a secret.
Oh, it is?
It's a secret. Yeah.
I bet you it'll have something to do with consuming meta beer.
Well, it could be their new Topo Chico hard seltzer that is in the metaverse.
Maybe that's it.
Anheuser-Busch apparently has the big game contract. Do you remember when Anheuser-Busch pulled away from the big game?
Yes.
Now they're all in big game. And I think that's because, one of the reasons is because people are watching this. Well,
I'm still buzzing from I don't know about you guys, this weekend's games, right? Stressful, exciting. You couldn't turn away.
No, and look, it's back.
Man, the NFL, those owners.
But I have to tell you.
They got to be so happy.
Can I tell you something? Why did I like that Nadal match? The Australian Open was. Listen, I think that we just feel good about watching something. You know? The Australian Open was extraordinary.
I did not. I know. I didn't see him beat Medvedev. I wish I had. Five sets.
He's amazing.
Number 22, right? 22? Yeah.
You know, he's worried about losing his hair.
Interesting.
Yeah. 21. Thank you, Chip.
I wanted to tell him it's okay.
Our producer, Chip, is a tennis expert, actually. Thank you.
Did you know he's worried about losing
21.
His hair?
Nadal?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He's OCD, obviously, because he's got that thing he does before he...
It works for him, there's no doubt. Congratulations.
I was going to say, man, I go for both. He's a quite exciting player.
To Nadal, to the Bengals, to the Rams. We'll get Kramer's Mad Dash countdown to the opening bell after a short break. Don't go anywhere.
All right, let's get to our first Mad Dash of the week, as we count you down to an opening bell for this Monday as well, Beyond Meat.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. After a series of endless downgrades of Beyond Meat, Barclays takes the other side, calling taking a bite beyond the retail shelf. This is the institutional side. This is what Ethan Brown always thought could happen. At the same time, still, competition in U.S. retail is getting tougher, and they kind of just basically say that, you know, look out, that there are risks to our thesis. And yet, I think that what's happened, David, and this is, I'm using this as metaphor, some of these growth stocks have fallen so much that people just don't want to stay as negative. And I think Beyond Meat, as we know, was one of the great growth stocks. Impossible's against them. Impossible's got GMO, so I always felt that the younger people who want veggie will go against GMO.
Well, so are you saying take a shot down 67% over the last year?
That's what Barclays is saying, because one of the problems had been that the institutional, the cafeterias hadn't done well. But McCormick said that business has come back when they were on with me the other day, the spice company. So, look, I am not advocating this. I am saying that I'm beginning to see, whether it be Netflix, whether it be On Meat, whether it be a guy Tesla today, that people are saying, you know what, growth has gotten too out of style. Let's start thinking about it, which would be very good, by the way, for Kathy Woods. I did make fun of his short thing, because at a certain point when you set up a short fund, you can get really walloped.
Yes, you can.
You could get walloped. Do I think that she caused the bottom in Robinhood? Yes. But she tried to cause the bottom in DraftKings, and that failed. But these stocks like Roku's come down so much. Zoom, by the way, is a very profitable company.
All right. Well, I could put Zoom there instead and say the same thing as we take a look at ARK Innovation. Has it come down enough?
Well, that's
what was a growth stock,
okay,
obviously a huge beneficiary of the pandemic.
The problem with a lot of these recommendations like this is it's not compelling. There's nothing in here.
Other than just saying the stock's down.
That's what I'm saying.
Not necessarily.
And that I think that you need Tinder.
That's not even as bad as Beyond Meat. Close.
Well, you need Tinder. You need Zoom to make, you need Zoom to take the money it has and buy someone.
Tinder?
Right?
Tinder? What did Tinder have to do with this?
Tinder. Yeah, fire.
Oh,
we
I see.
Something.
Not the dating app.
No. Oh my God, I forgot. Is that the swap thing?
I don't know.
Swipe left, swap them.
Yeah.
Hey, Buckle, somebody downgraded that the other day.
We're going to go before things get really
No, all I'm saying is that people are looking for reasons to buy growth. Okay,
Got
that's
it.
All I'm saying.
That's all he's saying. The opening bell's just a few minutes away. By the way, if you want, you can catch us anytime, anywhere. Listen to and follow the Squawk on the Street opening bell podcast. We're back after this.
Providers of streaming content are facing a big challenge, keeping subs who have signed up for blockbuster releases. The Journal today reporting data from subscription measurement firm Antenna, saying roughly half of U.S. viewers who signed up within 3 days of the release of Hamilton on Disney Plus and Wonder Woman 1984 on HBO Max were gone within 6 months. We've seen some other anecdotal reporting, Jim, about, say, voice assist. You get an Alexa, and then a couple months later, you're just no longer using it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how faddish things are, because I think that Disney would tell you maybe it's not growing as fast as it was, but it's been pretty consistent. And they have I think one of the themes of that piece was you got to have constant content. Got to have constant content.
You do. I start to wonder at this point when we will start to hear from some investors objecting to the strategy of focusing so much on direct-to-consumer and whether or not it's going to really be beneficial for some of these companies. And going back and arguing that perhaps you were better off actually selling your content to being an arms provider. I'm waiting for that argument to begin. It hasn't yet.
But the box office figures for January are horrendous. Now, what? I guess January didn't have good movies? I don't know. I mean, Adam Aaron, he sold when The Getting was good for AMC. In fairness, Adam did tell you he would sell. I mean, it wasn't like he hit that one.
Well, right? We've not mentioned Reed Hastings buying $20 million worth, his first open market purchase.
Yep, $20 million bucks. Hey,
yep.
I mean, something. Bought it after Ackman, I guess.
That's not a small purchase.
There's the opening bell on the CNBC real-time exchange this morning. At the big board, it's Shell, celebrating the simplification of the company's share structure and tax residence within the UK. At the NASDAQ, the Chinese Consulate General in New York, celebrating Lunar New Year, which, Jim, a lot of those who watch logistics, it's actually an important time where get a reprieve from those ships going from Shanghai to L.A.
Well, I had a Flexport on the other day, and the Oakland port has only seven... They have almost no traffic. And the idea that everyone keeps going to Long Beach, and one of the Long Beach problems, by the way, very powerful. People don't remember how powerful the Longshoremen Union was and is. And they're very powerful. They're not easily bought off, so to speak. One that I think, just in terms of watching Shell, remember, Shell wanted to simplify, but they also wanted to reduce their carbon footprint. And, their footprint in the Permian was bought by Conoco, which reports on the third. And I think Conoco is going to have a fantastic quarter because of it.
Yeah. Shell not the only one, by the way. Unilever also, right?
Yeah.
Going to that single structure in the UK.
And it always
actually happens. Beneficiary, despite the fact that, with Brexit, there were a lot of people doubting whether or not these companies might want to do that.
Unilever had a tough quarter.
Because they both were obviously Dutch.
But don't you think that if you have two headquarters, you're going to take out some costs if you only have one?
Yeah.
But Unilever had a tough quarter. They didn't grow as fast as Procter. Procter, people forgot that it was a great quarter. It's almost like it didn't matter.
Did you do the Chevron, the Truist downgrade over there at the Wall?
No. And I'm a huge fan of Chevron. It's in my charitable trust. It stung. When I read it, it stung because it said the downstream's not that good. It said the costs are not great in
running out
Australia.
Of some credits.
And what I didn't like about it is that in the end, you're selling a company that is doing a lot of what it can to be able to become a cleaner enterprise. And the guy says, Neil Dingman, he goes, and this was painful. However, we estimate that margins around this area of trying to get less carbon, there will likely be quite low the next couple of years. Well, no, like, people, the fact is he's trying, like, Worth. Yes, the margins are low. I mean, one of the things that he committed to was saying, listen, we're spending $10 billion. We're not going to make a lot of money on these things, but we're trying to do the right thing. So are we now getting to where some people are saying, you know what? I want an oil company without a lot of ESG because the margins aren't that good.
They prefer Devon and Oxy. Right? And
I just felt, you know, I read it and I wanted to call Mike Worth and just say, Mike, you know what? Reason why you shouldn't do ESG.
There are a lot of cross currents for these the majors from their shareholder base, from to a certain extent. And, you know, this idea, though, that they become capital constrained as a result of it has not happened. Obviously, they have been the beneficiary not of their efforts in ESG, so to speak, or to lower their carbon footprint, but simply because the underlying commodity has gone up so much in price that they're generating enormous amounts of cash. Both Exxon and Chevron, I'm talking about.
But what
now.
Do you think about the idea,
Jim? At some point, by the way, there are going to be an awful lot of electric vehicles in the world. Now, it's still many years from now, even with Tesla selling over a million, let's call it, or even 2 million, whatever the number may be next year or the year after, and many others. At some point,
Did you read the Ford,
maybe 10 years from now,
piece about
there's not going to be as much demand for gasoline, transportation fuel.
Already, the electric has passed diesel in Europe, and diesel is.
And so, you do need to come up with at least a long-term strategy that's going to keep you in business.
You know, the idea that you look at the margins
right here. By the way, jet fuel and any number of other plastics. Well, there are plenty of other
jet fuel alternatives. Mike. You're like kidding me. Like, people.
I know. Well, you know, you call Powell Jerry. I mean, you know.
I never call him Jerry.
I know. I'm kidding. That was a joke.
No, but I just saw this and I said, nobody said that Mike Worth's efforts to become less carbon intensive would make them. I mean, I think it's amazing that he's even trying to make money at it. David, I'm just saying that this made me feel like that it was an insurance policy to not have what happened at Exxon. And my experience with Mike Worth is that's not the case.
Well. Listen, we should be talking about it all the time. It's an incredibly important initiative by both Chevron and Exxon. There are still people who question it longer term and what the strategy ultimately will be. And can they truly ever hope to be even, you know, they have ambitions, by the way. They've never committed to be carbon neutral. The whole idea of it seems impossible for oil companies
to get to that point,
even if it's 30 years from
now. They don't want to lose their shareholder base, which they were losing.
They were losing.
Yes.
But then again, if you were a shareholder over the last year, you're very happy.
Well, true. I'm just saying that there are many of these companies, which we would have at one point regarded as irresponsible, that are now doing the right thing. And this Truist piece made me feel that, like, don't do too much of the right thing. It'll hurt your margins.
No good deed goes
no
on.
No good deed.
Right.
Speaking of decarbonization, this Credit Suisse upgraded Tesla today. We are hard-pressed to find a stock that checks all the boxes like Tesla does. Disruption, decarbonization, growth, cash. Although they keep 1025, Jim, to your earlier point.
Right. I thought that piece was very well thought out.
By the way, Tesla back above 880 or getting close to it. It really did bounce off the 200 day on Friday.
No, this was a very important piece because it really does talk about how, look, you want to be an EV, and really still only Tesla is EV. Now, I come back and I read the Ford piece in New Yorker. I come back and think about what Jim Farley's doing at Ford, and I keep thinking he has the F-150, and he can't make the electric F-150s fast enough. The gating problem, again, is the battery. Are there enough batteries? And they're not. Everything's gated. You hear that Caterpillar quarter? They're like freight. They have to, like, ship freight. It's a fortune. Caterpillar's a really well-run company.
Caterpillar.
Yes. So they decided to sacrifice margins to keep customers happy. So what happens? Savage the stock. But they decide that was the right thing to do.
And it probably is.
Right.
Longer term, you want to. That's a good idea for business.
But look at
keeping your customers happy.
He's getting killed.
All right. 2.6%? Really?
Oh,
killed?
God. Okay.
Well, remember when Benioff was letting customers be going easy on payments?
Yes.
Ended up being good in the long term.
Initially, the stock got hurt, and then it came back.
Yeah.
I don't know, unless you're like part of life sciences, you're just not getting any benefit. When people, if everybody has supply chain problems, you would think that it would be okay, right? It's like, oh, yeah, supply chain. No, every time it comes up, it's a new, oh, they had supply chain problems? Like, everybody has supply chain problems because you can't get the plastic bag, you can't get the paper, you can't get the wood, you can't, how about the aluminum
piece
this morning?
How about the Kellogg downgrade today? All the things you just said.
Brutal.
Guys, I want to get to big LBO, the morning Citrix, if I can.
Well, if you can,
as you go through,
I'm a little depressed.
Yeah, look for your Kellogg. Look for your Kellogg thing, and I'll.
Go ahead. And just say
thank you.
I tried to make it interesting. And
you do.
All right, thank you.
Every
all
so
right.
often, I'll do one of these because it is one of the largest LBOs okay. we've seen in a very, very long time.
And a great product.
Although not a particularly rewarding price for anybody who's gotten in the stock recently, in part on reports of the talks between Citrix and Vista and Elliott, its two buyers. The deal was announced this morning. It's $104 a share. And again, there had been some hopes that it would be far higher. It's not. Perhaps reflective of the current market for technology stocks, the multiples lower than might have been anticipated. It's interesting from a for how it's being constructed, because Elliott, which is getting bigger and bigger as a player in private equity, even though the Evergreen is what they call their effort there, but the funds come out of the Elliott complex, so to speak, and they report one performance number. But PE is obviously becoming a very important part of their overall strategy. Remember, they did an enormous deal where they sold Athena Healthcare last year, one of the biggest deals we'd seen, $17 billion, a big win for them, by the way, last year on that deal. This one we'll see, but they're buying Citrix along with Vista. Elliott contributing $2 billion, roughly, is what I'm hearing, in equity. Most of it is debt, of course. That's the way you set things up. In fact, as much as $17.5 billion in total debt, because they're both refinancing the existing debt at Citrix, the refinancing debt at TIBCO. I'll get to that in a minute. And obviously, there is the debt financing for the purchase of the Citrix shares. Then you add in $2 billion in equity. What is Vista putting in? TIBCO, a business they bought in 2014. Is what they're contributing. Now, I don't know the overall valuation for the deal. They paid $4 billion for TIBCO in 2014. Obviously, it's being valued at more than that right now. So they're not putting in actual cash from a fund. They are putting in a unit that will create a very large company in the software area. By the way, TIBCO, I'm told, has increased its annual recurring revenue from what had been 40% of that revenue to 90% recently. And that's the play here for Citrix as well. And Jim, you know this well, higher multiple will be awarded to companies that obviously have a higher percentage of their revenues as recurring. And that's the hope here. They've had some missteps. They've had some execution issues on their road to this. And by the way, Elliott had been on the board, owned the stock for quite some time, sold some of it, and then bought a bunch back. Let's call it mid to early last year or summer last year. And finally move ahead with this actual transaction. But they're going to lever it about 7x EBITDA is what I'm hearing, which is not bad, but is reflective at least of taking a certain amount of risk here. So 7 years, 7 years worth of EBITDA is represented in terms of the debt being taken on. But the idea is to obviously get that EBITDA going up and have it more secure as a result of having a higher percentage of revenue be recurring for Citrix.
David, when these companies go, let's go back to TIBCO. It was Vivek Ranadive's company, owns the basketball team. You said that, yeah, of course, it increased in value. I was looking at, I want to figure out, like.
But I don't know how much, because they're not telling me, at least.
Right.
Like, we don't know where it's being valued for purposes of this transaction.
Well, we're starting to see these companies come public again. Lifetime was a very good company, and they felt that they didn't get a good multiple. So then they come public and in a more bountiful multiple time, and now the multiple's streaky again. I mean,
right.
Do we see this?
So Vista's not taking TIBCO public. Instead, they're using it in this fashion.
That's what I'm wondering.
As a way to be
is the
equity
private
contribution,
market,
in a sense.
How closed is the private market? Is the equity market here?
Right now, pretty closed.
Well, that
right
can
now,
help
pretty
us.
Closed.
That can help.
That can change quickly, as you know.
I know.
But right
but it,
now, you're not thinking long and hard about taking a company public in this market, if it's software as a service or anything like that.
Right. But also,
whereas
the
a year
SPACs.
Ago, of course, you couldn't wait.
I mean, I was doing some work this weekend on a company, Beauty Health. Okay,
yeah.
This was Brent Saunders. He named a new CEO last week. And they have a...
This was his SPAC deal.
Yes.
That he did, where they do the makeup machine.
Yeah, but it's popular.
Or whatever, the facial machine.
But people think that the facial machine's real. I mean, it's no one thinks it's not real. But here's a company that sold at, it sold at 30, and now it's at 12. It happened out of nowhere. It just kind of disappeared. It had no, there's no sponsorship.
Still above 10. It's still a winner.
It's, well, in my list of, I did a list of SPACs of the, this is a winner. That's what made me, I'm going back over the ones that are winners. And it
is interesting. Take a look at the post-SPAC index that we have. It's like trading at 59.
I urge people to look at these because I don't want them to get hurt.
Yeah.
Because some of the SPACs, when, you know, when we had Gary Gensler on, the chairman, he said that a lot of these, you know, they, a celebrity SPAC in particular, he was quite critical of the idea that you had a celebrity. I'm just saying that these are, these
well,
cost
was,
people
but,
tremendous.
But remember at the time, I think it was Liontree was making a case that any cash flow could be discounted through a SPAC. It could be a celebrity, it could be an athlete. The model was sort of wider than the imagination.
Yes. Everybody had a SPAC and a dream.
They sure did.
A lot of those
and
dreams have become nightmares.
What were they thinking about the...
They were in, yeah.
In succession.
Succession.
Did they opine positive or negatively on the Gojo?
You know, typical Ari Berkoff fashion, I think they were on both sides. He had that deal wired from beginning to end. Wouldn't have mattered what happened. He was going to make money.
We're referring to succession and the fact that they mentioned at the end that Liontree opined. And those of us who, many of us know Arya.
You can't get better marketing than that.
We're thrilled because Arya is such a great guy.
Can't get better.
And it was just a lot of fun to see that.
Overall, guys, I'm struck, Jim, the S&P leaders this morning, Netflix, Tesla, Align, all of these names that, as you say, have come down, whether it's a short cover still or not.
I believe that people, this is the backlash, and Cathie Wood, you know, could have a bit of a run here. I mean, Align, look, Align is a great company. I don't know if you guys use Invisalign. My daughter used Invisalign. And it went from 737 down to 480. It's a very good company. Joe Hogan's been making the number. There's no reason for that to go down. Enphase last week, because of the California change in the law, Enphase, which is the best solar company, got crushed. So I'm just saying that people are saying, wait a second. Let's stop it, take a breath, and stop throwing these away. Maybe January is the end of the growth stock Armageddon.
All right, but you're not willing to say it. You're just saying maybe.
Maybe, well, because I'd like to see a catalyst. That's why I brought Beyond Meat. I don't know the catalyst. I'd like a catalyst.
Well, other than the Fed saying we're reversing course, what would be a catalyst?
You know what a catalyst is? Someone buying $20 million worth of stock. Reed Hastings is so cool.
He is. I mean, $20 million for him is not a lot, though.
Oh, God. So,
all right, it's a lot for me. It's a lot for you.
I have a shell over my head.
Yeah, you do.
I know.
It's nice.
Clam shell.
Yeah, it's kind of cute.
Botticelli.
Here it is. Look at that.
Botticelli.
Perfect. You're perfectly
situated. Botticelli.
Perfectly situated. Let's move that head right. Yeah, perfect. Okay.
So we got a roughly flat open here on this Monday, 44.36. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
Good morning, guys. Happy Monday, everybody. Let's hope the... growth stock Armageddon, as Jim said, is done in January. But remember, the market leaders were cyclical and value stocks. And a little bit of a problem today. Caterpillar's down 5. Dow Inc. is down a few dollars. Visa's down 2. Separate group here. Take a look at the sectors. And remember, energy is the big leader for the month, even though it's a small part of the S&P. It's a little weaker today. Banks have done okay, although banks really have sold off essentially since their earnings season started, but still flattish on the month. Industrials have held up, and tech, of course, is the big problem that we're looking at. So where are we right now? If you look at what happened on Friday, there's not a lot of people who have conviction that that was the bottom. The good news is the valuations are a lot lower. We were talking about 21 times forward. Now it's 19 times. We've seen record capital returns. I talked to you on Friday about the dividends. Record dividend payouts are happening now. Record buybacks. Those are capital returns. That's good. Cash on hand. People like dividends now with lower expected returns. The bad news is inflation and the extent of the rate hikes are really unclear, and that's a really serious headwind to deal with right now. As for the earnings situation, well, we've got about a third reporting. We'll hit 50% around Thursday. The average beats very normal. This is what it used to be back in 2019 and 2018, 5%, 6% earnings beats. Remember, we got used to 10, 11, 12, 15%. That's not happening right now. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but we're just getting smaller beats. We're getting a little bit lower margins, and the first quarter estimates are a little lower than they were at the start of the year. As for the sectors in January, you see this value cyclical tilt, energy and banks being the two great examples, up 18%. Banks are flat going in, maybe down a point or so now that we've just opened. for the final day. Consumer staples are right in the middle. And there's your other cyclical groups there, industrials. Healthcare has got a very big growth component, largely because of the biotech end of things. And you see that suffering down 7%. As for the tech sector in January, that's the real problem, of course. But everybody knows that overall, the S&P tech sector down 9%. But much bigger declines once you get outside of the mega cap techs that's holding up that technology S&P. So software, semiconductors, internet-related stocks, all down in the mid-teens. There's Arc Innovation down 27%. So overall, let's just call it an ugly January. It's not the worst one, although we've got a few hours left for trading. The S&P 500 down 7.1% for the month. The worst January ever? Well, that was 2009, and we all lived through that. The S&P was down 8.6%. And I think, Carl, the only thing that's worse than January 2009, if you'll recall, you were here, was February 2009. February 2009, we dropped 11%. So we had the worst January ever in 2009. And we had the worst February ever in 2009. February was down 11%, as I recall. And then we bottomed. I believe it was March 9th, 2009, we bottomed. Let's hope we get a bottom in before what we had to live through in 2009. Long and painful first quarter of 2009. Carl, back to you.
Yeah, that takes me back, Bob. By the way, NASDAQ needs just above 14K, 14098 to avoid the worst ever January performance on NASDAQ. Bob, thanks.
Okay.
Chicago PMI crossing a couple moments ago, 65.2 for January. We were looking for 62.3. Don't forget, we've got some ISM numbers coming up tomorrow and Thursday as well. As for the bond market, 10-year holding 1.8, 2-year about 1.2, as we keep our eyes fixed on fixed income as well. Be right back. Financials are the laggard this morning as a sector as we get that curve continuing to flatten. You can see Schwab's in there as well, Kellogg with a downgrade. Citrix, though, also notable among the S&P losers this morning. Dow's down 100. We'll get stock trading with Jim in a minute. It's time for Jim and Stock Trading.
A lot of people are doing previews of the Facebooks, the Snaps, the Pinterest, Twitters, and the most compelling one that I read was from Morgan Stanley, which talked about how, believe it or not, Meta Industry, Facebook, looks like they had some incredibly good growth, well above 2019. Obviously, TikTok doing quite well, too. But the others, no, they think Snapchat may not be good. They particularly talk about Pinterest not being very good. So I would keep track of this because, obviously, Meta is not an expensive story on earnings. But this would be amazing if they really just continue to improve, especially because right now, you know that Mark Zuckerberg's saying, Joe Rogan. You know,
well, it goes back to that big debate about what responsibility these platforms have for actually mediating their content.
Yeah, and we had a story which says that Congress won't care. If we ever, Congress cares if there are headlines. So if I were Spotify, I'd be worried.
They
about
want it
Congress.
Both ways, though. They don't want to be treated as, you know, media companies in one way, then they want to be valued.
You can't have it both ways. You're either, you know, you're going to be pulled in at one time or another by the U.S. government because there are a lot of people who don't like what happened. We have 66% vaccination.
Sure. Yeah.
Was he one of the reasons why we didn't have more?
How about tonight?
Okay, I have a company called Silvergate. Now, they were the winner. They bought some of the, remember the coin, Libra from from Meta. Facebook, I'm going to call them Meta. Well, they have a stake in it. An old friend of mine, Dennis Frank, from Goldman Sachs, is chairman. These guys want to be the, let's say, the real go-to place for some of the troubled things that Gary Gensler's worried about in terms of the standards of crypto.
By the way, congrats on the crossword.
Oh,
Kramer's
thank you.
The New York Times
thank
crossword
you.
Today.
Yes, it is.
Mad Money Host.
I couldn't figure it out. I said, Mad Money Host. Faber didn't fit.
No, didn't fit.
Yeah,
I just wonder who that would be.
Try Keith Pavia. We'll see you tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.